What we need to know about Islam is that it's the world's fastest growing religion and the only significant religious system in the history of the human race with a socio-political structure of laws that mandate violence against the infidel.
Hank Canagraph of the Bible Answer Man talking about his presentation at the 2018 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
The current narrative is that if you tell the truth in this regard, well, you'll radicalize Muslims. But that's pure propaganda. What we need to do is wake up to the truth concerning Islam.
You can meet and hear Hank Canagraph making the case against Islam at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference Friday, June 8th and Saturday, June 9th in Collinsville, Illinois. Collinsville is 15 miles east of St. Louis. Learn more and register at issuesetc.org or call 618-223-8385.
Is being gay a perversion?
Senator, I'm going to give you the same answer I just gave you previously. My respect for every individual, regardless of their sexual orientation, is the same.
You name me any person who is against us today, I want to say that person is not our permanent enemy. That's a precious human being made in the image and likeness of God, someone who's got a conscience that we can appeal to somewhere in there, and our job should be to win him or her over.
You might have a terrible pharmacist, but the antibiotics are still going to cure the infection. And the same thing with church. The sacraments and the word and all the blessings that we receive from Christ through his church, those are too precious. Those are too valuable to give up, even though you've been wrong.
This is Bill, the bug guy, and I love listening to Issues Etc. every day while I spray bugs.
Wall Street Journal recently had a headline, Mormonism's Global Future. After a rough start, the deeply American religion is growing more popular abroad. It says that today, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints reports 16 million Mormons worldwide, including 1 million in Asia, 4 million in South America, and 600,000 in Africa. Growing abroad, while it shrinks, apparently, here in the United States. What does the Wall Street Journal mean by that? Uniquely or deeply American religion. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in live on this Tuesday afternoon, the 24th of April. We're going to talk about worldwide Mormonism. Bill McKeever, founder of Mormonism Research Ministry, will be our guest. Then a little bit later, there's a reported discovery of a papyrus with an alternate ending to the story of Abraham and Isaac. In this one, Isaac actually dies. Abraham kills him. There's a headline reading, "Was Abraham a murderer?" We'll talk with Dr. Andrew Steinman, Distinguished Professor of Theology and Hebrew at Concordia University, Chicago, about that in about a half hour. You can join us with questions or comments over the next hour or call in number 1-877-623-6943. Our in-studio email address, talkback@issuesetc.org. Our Twitter address, @issuesetc, and the Issues Etc. listener comment line, 618-223-8382. Joining us to talk about global Mormonism, Bill McKeever. He's a regular guest. He's founder of Mormonism Research Ministry based in Draper, Utah, and author of several books, including In Their Own Words, a collection of Mormon quotations, and Mormonism 101. Bill, welcome back.
Todd, it's great to be with you again.
What do you think the Wall Street Journal means when it calls Mormonism a deeply American religion?
Well, I think that phrase, and the author of this article was John G. Turner. Turner has written other books on Mormonism, primarily one I recall it was written about Brigham Young. I think what he probably is referring to is the fact that Mormonism certainly was born in the United States in upstate New York, and all its leaders have traditionally been Americans, usually white Americans. There's been some exceptions to that. For instance, the third president of the Mormon Church, in fact, was English. He was John Taylor, quite controversial, too, over an alleged message that he gave regarding polygamy, but that's a whole nother show. But anyway, most of the leadership is basically white, basically American, at least at the very top, because Mormonism does have a hierarchy of leadership at the very top. They have three men that compose what they call the first presidency. Then they have the 12 apostles, or the Council of the 12. And then below that, they have several quorums of the 70s. And now, when you get down into the 70s, you're going to start seeing a bit of color. You don't really see that at the top until just recently, and John Turner mentions this, where in the last Mormon conference, they announced a Brazilian apostle and a man by the name of Ulysses Soares, and also a man of Chinese background named Garrett Gong. Even though Garrett Gong is certainly American, he's at least a second-generation American, but Soares would be really the first apostle that I'm aware of in recent times that is not an American.
So let's talk about those global numbers. Okay. The Wall Street Journal is reporting, what are they saying there, 16 million worldwide?
Correct.
Does that seem to comport with the numbers that you've been able to see?
This is where it gets really dicey. The Mormon Church announced that they just crossed the 16 million threshold. And when you read these numbers in this article, I think Mr. Turner may be getting his numbers from the Mormon Church. Now, we also report what the Mormon Church says, but we like to also balance that with some other researchers that I personally feel are a little bit more honest when it comes to actual active members in the church. And this is why it's important. Though those numbers that are mentioned in this article sound pretty impressive, I bet you most of your listeners are not aware that in the Mormon Church, a convert to the Mormon Church is considered a member for life or until records indicate that they have become 110 years old. Now, what that means is you can have an individual, let's say, convert to Mormonism in any given country. That person's name will be on the books unless that individual takes the time to let the church know that they no longer wish to be a Mormon. They can be inactive, but still have their name on the books. Unless they formally remove their name, or they've been excommunicated for some infraction that goes against the commandments of the Mormon Church, or a formal resignation. And it has to be done by a letter that is sent to the leadership, the church headquarters in Salt Lake City. If they don't do that, then their name remains. Now, think about this. In a lot of these countries where Mormonism seems to be making a lot of ground, it makes you wonder, well, how many people in these countries know all those rules to get their name taken off? So what you have is many of them will kind of drift off into unbelief, never to go back to the Mormon Church again, but yet their names are still there. So that becomes problematic when you're trying to figure out how many Mormons are there out there in actuality. And there have been several Mormons that have been a bit critical of how the Mormon Church keeps a tally of its records, because some have found that in many of these foreign countries, the attrition rate is huge. It's huge. I mean, a person can be a member in the church, and within a year, they're no longer attending the church. Now, if they haven't gone through the process of having their name removed, and they were not accused of doing something wrong and being excommunicated or disfellowshipped, there's no reason for the church to remove their name. So you can see how the numbers can be all over the map, depending on who you're talking to.
So there's a high probability that those are overreported or inflated numbers.
Absolutely. I would say that they no doubt are overreported. One of the sites that I like to go to is Camorra.com. And I find that at this site, the guy who runs that site is much more in tune with what is actually happening. Let me just read you a little portion from a part that I was reading today, where it says, the LDS Church News noted the inclusion of a category for Latter-day Saints on the Chilean census as a sign of the church's growth and respect, yet failed to ever report the far more significant results of the census demonstrated that only 104,000 of the 520,000 members claimed on LDS rolls at the time identified the LDS church as their faith of preference or any of the other national censuses. Now, what does that mean? In some countries, you have to tell the government what religion you are. And so if you were asked that question by your government census and you don't recognize yourself as a Mormon, you're not going to say you're a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And the reason you may not say that is because you might have joined it officially, been baptized into the church at an earlier date, but since then, for whatever reason, you no longer attend and you're no longer active. Well, the church doesn't count you as leaving. You're still a member as far as their numbers are concerned. And in this particular instance, 104,000 said that they were, as opposed to 520,000 members who were on the membership rolls. You can see the disparity there.
That's not just over-reporting. That's kind of into the realm of blatantly inaccurate.
Well, yeah, it's just the way the Mormon Church does it. And again, if you don't take the time to get your name taken off the rolls, and Todd, I find this problem even here in the United States. I've talked to numerous people who have left the Mormon Church. They no longer believe it to be true. They haven't attended in months or even years. And I'll ask them, well, have you taken the time to get your name off the rolls? And they'll say something like, no, because I don't really care. They just want to have no more part of the Mormon Church. They've lost that kind of interest. So you can see if that's a problem here in the United States, it's got to be a problem in the foreign countries as well.
Can you explain to us how Mormon mission work is primarily done?
Well, most of the missionary work is done by younger people in the church. There's a positive peer pressure in the Mormon church that when you reach a certain age, and now that age for males is 18, as young as 18, used to be 19. And if you're a female, it used to be 21, now it's 19. And there a lot of these missionaries are now females, whereas before they were never really encouraged to go out in the mission field. But now if you took away the female members who were missionaries, the numbers would go substantially down because they make up a considerable size of the mission now. But these young people are trained for about 3 weeks or so, depending or not if they're learning a new language. That would take a little bit longer. But they don't get a lot of in-depth training on what to do as a missionary other than what their days that they're supposed to commit to doing their door-to-door work, how many hours in a day they're supposed to do it, what their days off are, and so forth. So they are going out there basically with the knowledge that they've already had with them when they became a missionary, and they do feel that this calling comes from the very top. They do, and I've talked to many of these young people, they really think that the prophet of the church called them to go on a mission. And so there's a lot of prestige in the Mormon church for these young people that go out and serve on a mission. I mean, I see them walking down the street here in Utah, and I'll notice cars slow down and the kids in the back seat will wave at them, hi, elder, things like that. And of course, they'll wave back because they're kind of like rock stars here in Utah to go out and serve on their mission. But I think what might intimidate a lot of people is the badge that they wear, because Mormon males are all known as elders if they're on their mission. And some people see that elder title and they think, well, man, I'm talking to someone who must really know their stuff, and I don't know if I can quite keep up with that. And I often tell people, don't let that intimidate you. We don't know of too many 18-year-old theologians in the Christian community. I'm sure there's not a whole lot of them in the Mormon community. So I don't think people should really be too worried about that. Many of these young people have a lot of zeal, but they don't have a lot of knowledge regarding Mormon doctrine or even Mormon history. I have talked to Mormon missionaries who had never even read the Book of Mormon till just before going on their mission. Well, if that's the case, how much knowledge can they really have about this book? I had a couple of missionaries in my front room not long ago who had told me they had never in their life read the New Testament. How do you determine theological truth if you've never even cracked the New Testament open to look and see what it has to say? So that's basically how the mission field is in the Mormon church right now. It's predominantly young people, but they also have retired couples that usually man visitor centers. That's where I see a lot of them. And they have service missionaries that will donate time doing things for the church, but not necessarily going out like the missionaries we see perhaps in bicycles or in cars going door to door.
Bill McKeever is our guest, founder of Mormonism Research Ministry, based in Draper, Utah. We're talking with him about worldwide Mormonism, playing off of a story in the Wall Street Journal, Mormonism's Global Future. After a rough start, the deeply American religion is growing more popular abroad. We'll talk more with him right after this.
I think one thing we're going to do right out of the gate is define what pro-life is.
Scott Klusendorf talking about his presentation at the 2018 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
That term is now being confused. It's being put up for grabs, and we're going to make clear what the pro-life syllogism is, how we can make that case for life with people who don't accept biblical authority, who maybe don't even know what it is we stand for, and are subject to being confused. So there's a crying need to clarify what pro-life means, what our actual arguments are, and then we'll look at five bad ways people argue against the pro-life case in the public square so that we can be prepared to give good, solid, Christ-honoring answers.
You can meet and hear Scott Klusendorf making the case for life at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, June 8th and Saturday, June 9th in Collinsville, Illinois. Learn more about conference speakers and topics and register at issuesetc.org.
Equipping the priesthood of all believers, you're listening to Issues Etc.
Remember when education was about the fundamental skills of reading, writing, and arithmetic? And about reading great literature and studying history to give our kids a model for what it is to be a good person? Memoria Press's classical Christian curriculum offers that very model for your homeschool. Get $5 off your next order by using the coupon code LPR17. For more information, go to memoriapress.com. Memoria Press, a classical Christian education that works.
Hey, Todd. What have our listeners noticed first when visiting the LPR studios?
Definitely the small size and the dirt.
Well, not anymore. Thanks to our friends at the Cleaning Authority. They've turned this man cave into a space that meets even our wives' approval.
Whether it's our office or your home, the Cleaning Authority is your cleaning service provider in the St. Louis area.
To schedule a free estimate or to find out more, visit thecleaningauthority.com. Thecleaningauthority.com.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about worldwide Mormonism. Bill McKeever is our guest. He's founder of Mormonism Research Ministry based in Draper, Utah. Bill, I want to pick up where we left off there. You got the Mormon missionaries out there on their bikes. They're out there knocking doors. They're there for what, a year or two? Is that right?
The males serve for 2 years, the females serve for a year and a half.
They go door to door, and let's say they talk to 10 families or something in the course of a good day for them. I don't know how that really works. How does that translate into, I'm wondering about these numbers again, do people have to actually join a ward or a branch in order to be counted as Mormons?
Well, what they have to do is, the missionaries will usually come to the house. Now, they could just be happening to canvass the area that day, and they find someone who may be interested. And let's say perhaps through that contact, they call them an investigator. And if someone is really open to the restored gospel, as it's understood by the Mormon Church, they would probably refer to that individual as a golden contact. In other words, they haven't seemed to be corrupted by any what Mormons call anti-Mormon literature or things like that. The person wants to join the church, so they make a commitment to be baptized into the church. And that's usually any time after, let's say, the third lesson, and there's about six lessons that they'll go through. And they're learning various aspects from the missionaries from a manual called Preach My Gospel. This manual came out, I think back in 2004, and it's kind of an outline of what the missionaries are supposed to follow when they go through the various lessons with the investigator. But they have to be baptized in order to become an official member in the church. And it sometimes can be a little deceiving, too, because it's not really the efforts of the missionaries that I think brings a lot of people into the church. What happens is usually you'll have a member in the church who is talking to, let's say, an acquaintance, a neighbor, or maybe a family member, and talking to them about the church, and that individual seems to be interested, and what will happen is that member will then refer them to a missionary or two missionaries, and then the missionaries will come and give them the lesson. So you could say in some regard that the missionaries are kind of the middleman, but they have to be there because they're eventually going to get the sale, if you will. But becoming a member involves being baptized in the church. That's absolutely essential. Once you were baptized, then you're considered a member of record. The only way you're going to get your name off of there is if you write to the church requesting to have your name removed. Usually what will happen is you'll get a letter back giving you maybe, let's say, a 30-day cooling off period. And if you really want to have your name removed, eventually the process will go through and your name will be removed. And you will get a letter signifying as such. I was just talking with a couple who just recently came out of the Mormon Church who just received their letter saying that their names had been removed. And think about this. They had been in the church pretty much all of their lives, and they're up in their 60s right now. But you know what brought them out was reading Mormon material, especially the Gospel Topics essays that the church started coming out with back in 2013, when those essays were much more candid about church doctrine and history than they have been in the past. And as this one lady referred, you know, that I was talking to told me, she was amazed at what she was reading because, as far as she was concerned, what was in those essays, she had heard much of it was nothing but lies, and now she saw that the church was admitting to a lot of things that she found appalling.
What concerns me here is that there may not be, since the missionaries themselves, these young men, are often ill-informed about the nature of their own religion, they sometimes mistakenly believe that they are actually evangelizing for Christianity. I've talked to them. You've talked to them. And when you begin to just talk about the basic differences in doctrine, they are a little bit stunned to hear that sometimes.
Right.
I wonder whether or not the converts to Mormonism that are being numbered here in this Wall Street Journal piece, there may be a fair number of them thinking that they're actually joining a Christian church.
You could be absolutely right on that, Todd. In fact, I have talked to people that did just that. I remember having a conversation with one man who was raised in a Christian church who was very unfamiliar with Mormonism, but listened to what the missionaries told him, ended up joining the church, and then as he started studying church manuals, it dawned on him, and he told me this. He says, "I asked myself, what have I done?" Because that's not the message that he was hearing from the missionaries. The missionaries usually don't get into a lot of very deep doctrine. One is they probably are not even aware of the deep doctrine themselves. And I've had so many people come to me saying, well, I talked to these missionaries, and I almost felt like they were lying to me because they were agreeing with everything I was saying. I says, well, I'm usually a little more patient before I accuse someone of lying. It could be that you just weren't defining your terms clearly enough. And so when you, for instance, say to a Mormon, well, do you believe in grace? Well, a Mormon could say yes, because they do have a doctrine of grace in their theology. It's just not defined the same way that we would define it. And the same would go with even their Jesus. The Jesus they speak of certainly doesn't sound like the Jesus we speak of. And so those differences need to be tackled if you're going to have a fruitful conversation with a Latter-day Saint. And this is why we often counsel Christians to make sure you define your terms so that you're on the same page. And if it sounds like the missionary is agreeing with what you believe, and you kind of wonder, can that really be true? There's nothing wrong with asking the missionary very politely, what do you mean when you use this word? For instance, grace. What is your definition of the word grace? And they may give you a very typical Mormon definition. It's an enabling power that allows an individual to keep all the necessary commandments in order to become exalted. That's basically what it is. And of course, the grace to forgive you of your sins, according to Mormon theology, that isn't granted until you meet certain requirements. And this is why we come across so many Latter-day Saints that have no clue whether or not all of their sins are forgiven. That's a real, a soft underbelly in Mormon theology that I think as Christians we need to exploit. We need to talk to them about the assurance that they may or may not have regarding their forgiveness. And even if they say they do have an assurance, that doesn't mean we can't ask a follow-up question, and that is simply, well, how did you obtain that assurance? Because usually when I ask these follow-up questions, it becomes readily apparent that they really don't have the assurance that they first told me they had. Because when I'm asking these pointed questions, it starts to break down very quickly because they're not doing all the necessary requirements in order to receive what they're seeking.
Bill McKeever is founder of Mormonism Research Ministry based in Draper, Utah. He is author of several books, including In Their Own Words, a collection of Mormon quotations, and Mormonism 101. You'll find a link to this book and to Mormonism Research Ministry under the Listen on Demand page at issuesetc.org. Bill, thanks for being our guest.
My pleasure.
Dr. Andrew Steinman joins us on the other side of the break. There is a reported discovery of a papyrus. This was actually discovered a long time ago, but archaeological discoveries take forever to make it into the news, you may have noticed. The papyrus discovered back in 1934, 1,500 years old, apparently has an alternate ending to the story of Abraham sacrificing Isaac. In the biblical story, God stays Abraham's hand and Isaac lives. In the alternate ending, he doesn't. We'll talk about it after this. Is the Proverbs 31 woman primarily a prescription of how to become a better wife, mother, woman, or friend? The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for April is Demystifying the Proverbs 31 Woman. It's published by Concordia Publishing House. Their phone number, 1-800-325-3040. Or learn more about Demystifying the Proverbs 31 Woman at issuesetc.org. The Issues Etc. Book of the Month, Demystifying the Proverbs 31 Woman.
Throughout the 50 days of Easter, sacred music for the world. LutheranPublicRadio.org. Listen 24/7 to sacred music for the Easter season. LPR, LutheranPublicRadio.org.
There are nearly 20 million college students in the United States. 40% will stop going to church during college. 50% will never return. The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod is seeking to meet this challenge through LCMSU. Why? Because 100% of college students matter to God and to His church. College is tough. You need Jesus. We'll help. LCMSU. Check us out at lcms.org/lcmsu.
Do you find yourself fixing the theology on store-bought greeting cards when you give them to friends and family? Put away that Sharpie. EdGruesome.com has greeting cards, art, jewelry, certificates, church banners, housewares, and all sorts of fantastic gifts that proclaim Christ crucified for us. Whether you're a value shopper or a collector, you'll find something at EdGruesome.com. That's ADCRUCEM.com.
Essential exercise for the Christian mind. You're listening to Issues Etc.
St. Jacobi Lutheran Church in Shawnee, Wisconsin has a special guest each and every week. It isn't you, but it is Jesus Christ. He is a guest, and He is also the one who comes to serve you with His preached word in His broken body and shed blood. You are invited to be served by Jesus on Saturday evening at 6:30 and Sunday morning at 9 a.m. Visit www.stjakobi.org for more information.
Have you ever wanted to better understand philosophy and its impact on your family, your church, or your world, but didn't know where to begin? Concordia University, Wisconsin has an innovative, free online course for you entitled Philosophy Kata Christan. These six engaging video sessions are taught by noted Lutheran philosopher, lecturer, author, and pastor, Dr. Gregory Scholz. Learn more by clicking the Kata Christan logo at issuesetc.org. issuesetc.org.